Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Sales Enablement Live. We're streaming live here from the Kruger Marketing headquarters in Sydney, Australia. And apologies in advance if we get some background noise. We have extreme rain forecasted today. And for anybody who doesn't know what that means in an Australian context, this is going to be quite crazy weather. So we try not to get too distracted today. But thank you so much for joining today. And what we want to talk about today is strategic sales enablement and specifically what it is, why it makes sense. We want to talk about what's stopping organizations to be strategic about sales enablement. And we also want to talk about strategic approaches. And on top of that, towards the end, we'll also dive into the nitty-gritty of developing a sales enablement strategy. So thank you so much for joining. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
How are you going?
Good, good. I will mute you for now. Please type in the chat if you got any questions along the way, and we'll cover those. Let's dive right in. So first of all, I just want to give you a bit of context why I'm passionate about strategic sales enablement and why this is a topic I really like to talk about. So in 2010, I worked for an Australian media company called Fairfax Media. And for those of you who are not familiar with the kind of selling environment and buying environment in the media landscape, it is an extremely complex setup. So especially with large media companies like Fairfax Media, you have an incredibly complex setup on the seller side with a matrix structure with different product categories, different product managers, different kinds of sales teams, and so on. And then on top of that, you also have incredibly complex stakeholder environment on the buyer side. So you would have media agencies being the gatekeepers for buying decisions, and then market CMOs and marketing managers on the brand side making the final decisions around media investment. And I occupied a sales enablement role with revenue responsibility in this complex stakeholder environment. And what we experienced initially was we're extremely reactive in that role, you know. And there was back in the days in 2010, where in a lot of cases was still enough to do any sort of sales enablement to have a competitive advantage. And we were extremely reactive in the things that we were doing. So the proactive activity was really limited to the creation of one of sales decks that were hardly ever iterated because we were so busy with servicing the sales team. And the proposal support. The support in creating proposals for media agencies. And this was extremely reactive. We were dealing with a sales team of about 200 sellers Australia-wide. And we really didn't have the headspace to be more strategic about our effort. But then over time, we were given more resources. We had more budget to invest in our sales enablement approach. And we then basically did an analysis and became really strategic about our approach and really worked proactively on developing the business acumen of the sales team, helping them with objection handling, optimize content formats, work on allowing them to engage decision makers better with content and really speak their language. And the results were quite profound. So within a 5-year period, we grew our portfolio. So we had revenue responsibility as well. So we grew our portfolio of 500% over 5 years. And what I then also was told retrospectively of other people in similar roles and other media companies that we were competing with was that pretty much most of the market was essentially copying the way we went to market through our sales team. So we saw quite profound results on that front. And that then led me to develop my first business, which was designed to help marketing and sales teams to better engage senior decision makers with content specifically. And now my current business, Kruger Marketing, now works with sales, with business leaders and sales enablers to introduce more strategic sales enablement approaches and increase the capacity to implement initiatives. And what I wanted to do today is really give an insight into the approaches from a strategic point of view that we see working, and really give you some starting points if you're interested in being more strategic about your sales enablement efforts, on what to consider and the things you can do to immediately make an impact for your portfolio. Now, first of all, you know, you might ask the question, why does it even make sense to be more strategic? You know, and I mean, I've given you with a case study of what I've done at VFX Media, an example of why it works, but this might just be anecdotal evidence. If you really look at the research in the sales enablement space, you can really see that being strategic about the sales enablement approach really has a massive impact on the effectiveness of sales. So Sales Enablement Pro in 2020 has looked at the different approaches to sales enablement and what that does to the win rate. And their range that they've identified goes from reactive, which has an average win rate of 29%, to strategic, which is has an average win rate of 49%. So it's really safe to say that the more strategic businesses are in approaching sales enablement, the more you see an impact on the bottom line. Now, I want to qualify this a bit because it doesn't mean that automatically, if you're strategic about sales enablement, that your revenue numbers will go through the roof. Sales, and especially in a B2B context, is incredibly complex, and there are also a lot of variables internally that might impact on the win rate of an organization. So this is really indicative, but what is safe to say is that the more strategic you are from a sales enablement perspective, the more you set yourself up for success on that front. You know, there might other factors playing into that, especially in larger organizations, like the overall go-to-market strategy. But it certainly makes sense to be more strategic about sales enablement. Now, to set the goalpost here, when we talk about strategy, it really makes sense to also define strategy, because there's a wide range of approaches to the strategy. And generally speaking, strategy is all about planning what to do and what's most important to do immediately. Yeah. And there's kind of two key approaches to strategy that I see in dealing with clients and talking to peers around the world. There's the Western approach to strategy, which most businesses, especially in the tech space, would be familiar with. That approach is really resource focused. So you identify long-term goals, conduct an analysis, and then set a timeline of activities and responsibilities to achieve them. So this is a really really structured and resource focused approach. Yeah. Then there's the Asian approach to strategy, which is much more based on intuition and people focus. Yeah. And with the Asian approach to strategy, which it has a great book. It's quite an old book, but it is a great reflection of that approach to strategy, which is the Art of War. If you want to have a look. That approach really is also about defining long-term goals. Yes, so that's the similarity. But then if you go beyond that, it really is about moving towards a long-term goal by any means necessary while following general operating principles and tactic templates. Yeah, so there's a lot of room for agility with that approach. And it's more about defining overall operating principles and not be so focused about resource planning and assigning responsibilities along the way. So it's a much more agile approach. Having said that, I literally have not come across a single Western business that has successfully implemented that sort of approach. There's a lot of businesses that claim to be agile in their strategic approach, but that is often just an excuse to not to do your homework, and the execution is often quite poor as well. So what we're talking about here today is the Western approach to strategy. Yeah. And when we take the fact that a strategic sales enablement approach is more successful than a non-strategic sales enablement approach, what we're really seeing here, and I've witnessed that in talking to organizations, there's a downward spiral and there's an upward spiral that you create depending on what sort of approach you follow. if you're not strategic about sales enablement, you really set yourself up for a downward spiral. Yeah, for your sales enablement team in general, the efforts and the initiatives that you create for your sales team, but also for your career overall. Yeah, so. If you're not strategic about sales enablement, what you often see is that the sales results are not as effective as they could be, which means that you then don't get the seat on the table with senior executives. You're not as involved in those decisions around the go-to-market strategy. That often results the lack of relationship and the lack of alignment with senior executives then often leads to the funding not being there, which means that sales enablement teams are then more stretched for resources, which then in return makes them less strategic, less effective, and so on. So you really see in businesses that are not strategic about their sales enablement efforts for that dynamic to really take place and to be really reflected in the way they perform. Now, on the other hand, if you're strategic about your sales enablement approach, there's really an upward spiral going on. Yeah. So strategic sales enablement approach leads to increased sales effectiveness. It's then much easier to actually achieve senior executive buy-in, which then leads to more funding. You're better resourced, which then leads to you having more time to be more strategic about your approach, to stop, analyze, and formalize your strategy, which then in return leads to more effective sales performance and so on. So what do you see with businesses that are really strategic about their sales enablement approach? Oftentimes, those sales enablement teams gain much more budget and much more resourcing because you see that dynamic taking place. So guys, just to reiterate, if you got any questions, please drop them in the chat. Happy to cover them in the Q&A section. In terms of sales enablement in general, I think the term is still really loosely defined. Yeah. So, and the strategic sales enablement approach should really be taken as the gold standard. And there's a lot of great books out there, you know, from Tamara Schenk, from Mike Kunkel, which are both on the State of Sales Enablement podcast, that talk about that topic. Now, next up, I want to talk about what stops companies and sales enablers from being strategic and what you can do to actually overcome those barriers if they apply to you. Yeah. And a lot of times, first of all, the bottom line case for a lot of companies that, and especially in Australia, is they still don't have any sales enablement expertise in-house and pretty much trust on individual salespeople as lone warriors to hit the sales quota and really, pretty much leave it up to them to figure it out themselves. Yeah. In this case, it's really hard to actually establish a strategic sales enablement approach. And those kind of companies, oftentimes, those are oftentimes smaller companies, in some cases, even mid-sized businesses I've come across. In those cases, it's really hard to put sales enablement in place unless you actually hire a dedicated resource or you engage a third party like Kruger Marketing. So in those businesses, what I see, there's an extremely high barrier to actually start being strategic about sales enablement. The second scenario that really stops businesses from being strategic is that they have that shiny toy syndrome, right? So that means they follow whatever approach the vendor they currently talk to in the sales tool space and really follow that as their sales enablement mantra. Yeah. And the problem here is that, yes, vendors have some insight in what works and what doesn't, but they certainly oftentimes don't have the overall strategic acumen and insight into your business, and they also obviously have a conflict of interest because they have an interest in selling whatever strategy aligns with their specific technology solutions. Yeah, so businesses that really are distracted constantly by vendor pitches and take whatever is right in front of them as their sales enablement mantra also have a tough time to be really strategic about their sales enablement efforts. Now, I want to say, I talk to a lot of vendors in my work with clients, and I love them to death, don't get me wrong, but this is really something to be aware of. And I think vendors can bring a lot of insight and a lot of data to the table, and it's worthwhile considering that data in formalizing a strategy, but it never should be taken as gospel and never should be used to define your overall sales enablement strategy. That obviously also applies to my business. So we use also tech to go out to market and for our sales activity. And we utilize insight, especially case studies and information that is useful to inform certain decisions around the use of a certain platform. But we still have our own go-to-market strategy and sales enablement strategy to really make strategic decisions. Now, the other scenario where I really see sales enablement not being as strategic as it could be is if sales enablement responsibility is shared across different roles. Yeah. And this is, the kind of scenario that I call a random act of enablement. And a lot of times in this scenario, sales enablement responsibility is shared between, let's say, marketing leaders, sales leaders, and sometimes even sales reps. From a marketing point of view, that would mean, the marketing department every now and then helps create presentations, helps with the design, helps with some content, and supports sales on that front. From a sales leadership perspective, that often involves coaching and sometimes also the definition of what sort of training programs are required for their sales team. And then from a sales rep perspective, that's what we call the bottom-up approach. Oftentimes, these are responsibilities around sales enablement that are assigned by sales leaders for sales reps with certain expertise to work on to support the rest of the sales team with sales enablement services. And what you have in those kind of scenarios is that there's always a distraction that kind of stops those resources from being really truly strategic about sales enablement. The marketing leader has a marketing strategy to follow and primary KPIs around that. So sales enablement is a low priority. Sales leaders have revenue targets to hit and a lot of admin work to do, a lot of interaction with senior executives within the business. So they're distracted on that front and can't really be as strategic as they could be around sales enablement. And sales reps, obviously, in a nitty-gritty, basically, their day job is to hit quota to close deals. And they also can't really be as strategic as a dedicated sales enablement resource or sales enablement vendor could be around developing a sales enablement strategy. So in all of those scenarios, it's pretty much it's impossible to be as focused as you could be around your strategy unless there is a dedicated sales enablement resource. Now, next up, I want to talk about how you actually develop a sales enablement strategy and what is really required on that front to create a strategic output that really makes a difference to sales performance. Yeah, and we're talking about an input here of data that helps with the analysis, and then an output of the actual strategy that that helps on a day-to-day basis to actually execute and make a difference to the sales team. Now, from a output perspective, or from an input perspective, what we're looking at initially, if it really makes sense to conduct a sales content audit, this is typically a starting point. This is typically the number one starting point for businesses that also have a marketing team. Because there will be some sort of interaction between sales and marketing, so it makes sense to conduct a sales content audit. And when I talk about sales content, it's pretty much any content that could be useful to a potential buyer in making a buying decision around your product. Yeah, and what I'm talking about here is not only specifically sales collateral, slide decks that talk about product features, functions, and so on, but any sort of content on the website that has been created in the past that contains information that could be useful to buyers. Yeah, and that should be analyzed. When we work with large organizations, those self-content audits can quite quickly blow out. So we have recently worked on a project where we have analyzed 300 individual content pieces. So depending on the history of sales content, the kind of resourcing that you have on the marketing side, those kind of content pools can be quite significant. But it's still worthwhile conducting to actually identify what sort of content is useful, what sort of content can be used at different buying stages, and you know, to save production efforts and also budget along the way. Now, it also makes sense to interview the sales managers because they're the key stakeholders in actually executing on a sales enablement strategy. You know, I've seen a lot of sales enabler, especially in junior positions, actually neglecting that engagement around sales managers. And that is really a showstopper because if the sales managers don't buy in, there's really nothing happening. Yeah. And those kind of interviews with sales managers around their patches, actually understanding what they currently do, what sort of friction they see in the sales process currently, what sort of services they would like to see implemented to actually make life easier for their sales team are really crucial in actually understanding what is going on. Yeah, and oftentimes that those kind of interviews also unearth problems that you might not be aware of initially. On top of that, I would also, depending on the size of the sales team, generally, like I would recommend conducting a sales staff survey. So actually have a SurveyMonkey or whatever platform you use for those kind of services, surveys, to analyze the needs of the sales team and how they feel they're being equipped to go out to market, you know. And that sort of survey also offers the opportunity to actually analyze the different approaches across the sales team, how they tackle different stages of the sales process in their roles, what sort of objections they come across commonly, and how they engage with their buyers and where they see the most need for support along the way, you know. And again, those sales staff surveys, considering that the frontline salespeople are oftentimes the people that benefit most from a sales enablement initiative, those are also really crucial in actually understanding what the needs of those customers internally are for you. On top of that, I also strongly recommend, and this is really not mandatory, this is an absolute must, and how deep you go on that front is really dependent on the size of the market and the complexity of your product that you're selling. I would recommend conducting customer interviews. And a lot of the things that you would typically consider in a win-loss analysis should really be included in those customer interviews. Yeah. And so those things that you ask the customers include things like, you know, what's your decision-making process? You know, like what's your, what sort of roles are involved in the decision-making process? What sort of content did you utilize when making decisions in the past? You know, what you like to see in terms of the interaction with a sales team? How did you experience in the past the interaction with the sales team, and so on? And those customer interviews are absolutely necessary to really understand the target market and bust myths that not only might exist on your end, but also on the end of the sales team. You know, the sales team might also deal with a lot of assumptions and a lot of assumptions that can be and myths that can be busted by actually interviewing customers firsthand and really hearing it from the horse's mouth. On top of that, I would also recommend a CRM customer data analysis and really analyze what sort of commonalities you see across the customer pool, and you know, what sort of how the interactions with the sales team, especially with desirable deals and desirable customers, has looked like in the past. And you know, again, depending on the size of your organization, it really depends on how deep or how much data you have available and how deep you want to go on that front. But it really makes sense to also look at the CRM data, because that can not only show what customers and sales staff think is happening, but it actually shows based on data what was actually happening, you know. And again, there might be a gap between reality and expectation, and the CRM customer data analysis can also unearth a lot of interesting insights. Now, those are all the things that I just mentioned that really are the input for your strategic analysis, you know, and there can be an incredible amount of data, but it is safe to say that there's hardly any business that actually goes to that depth of strategic analysis of what is happening from a buyer perspective, from a sales perspective, and from a data perspective. And if you tick all those boxes, you're already more sophisticated than 90% of companies out there in market. And again, my business deals with a lot of businesses on the sales enablement front, and we can see that hardly any company actually goes to that depth of analysis to inform their strategy. So if you do that, you're definitely already on the right path to develop a strategy that is more competitive than what other players in the market are doing. Now, from an output perspective, this is really where you distill the insights from your strategic analysis and put them into actionable tools and content formats. And from an output perspective, the number one thing that I would recommend, if that's not already done on a more senior level from a go-to-market strategy point of view, defining the buyer persona and the ideal customer profile, you know, during the analysis, you might identify that what you thought was the ideal customer profile is actually not the case, because there's better budgeted kinds of companies out there that have a shorter sales cycle because there's less decision makers involved, and so on. So that sort of data can certainly help to again recalibrate buyer personas and ideal customer profiles and become more advanced on that front. Then the base for anything that follows should be the buyer journey map. And again, based on the sales interviews and the customer interviews, you can then define the buyer journey map by really mapping out how decisions are being made, what sort of content is needed along the way, what sort of stakeholders are involved, and really map that out. Based on that, and again, this is what very few organizations out there are actually doing, the sales process needs to be defined. You know, a lot of times what I see over and over again is that a sales process is defined based on a lot of assumptions that aren't validated through actual real-world insights. And this is really not helpful to the buyer at all. Any organization that is really customer-centric needs to take the buyer map as a basis for the definition of their sales process. Then you can look at the sales process and create a sales enablement gap analysis. So you look at what sort of process from a sales perspective is needed to serve the buyer best and help them to make an educated decision as quickly as possible in their journey. And look at what sort of gaps there are in terms of the sort of content, the sort of training, the sort of coaching you offer in order to make life easier for the salespeople and help them to better serve the customer. Yeah, and based on that gap analysis, you can then formalize initiatives, and those initiatives can then be prioritized based on the impact and the ease of the implementation. So generally speaking, I would recommend creating a matrix with two axes, one for the kind of impact that you expect those to make. And there's a lot of research out there on what sort of areas of focus can create what sort of impact for a sales team. So the Miller-Hyman CSO Insights Survey, for example, I would recommend looking at. And the ease of implementation, you know. And when I talk about the ease of implementation, I talk about the budget and the timeline required to actually make those initiatives happen. Yeah. And yeah, once you have that defined, it's all about the execution and actually making sure that all the key stakeholders within the organization stay on track, remain aligned, and you know, contribute to actually executing on those on that strategy that you have developed. And yeah, that's everything on my end at this stage. Do you have any questions for me on the things that I just talked about?
The thing that I find is I run a sales training business called Sales Success, and I go into businesses and don't just do the training and walk away. I'm sort of like rent a sales director. Mm-hmm. And the thing I find is that the sales enablement function is not very well defined in terms of who does what. It's like everybody's got the hand in the pie and ends up not being strategic at all. What's your definition of sales enablement? That's what I'm interested in.
So, I mean, sales enablement, first of all, what you're describing sounds to me like sales enablement is shared, you know, like what I described earlier. So there's some sales enablement responsibility across marketing, across the sales managers and so on. You know, my definition of sales enablement is actually a strategic effort to provide all the tools and resources necessary for sellers to better serve their buyers, you know. And from a buyer perspective, what that means is that they are able to make the best decision for their business as fast as possible, you know. And, you know, as I said, like to be as strategic as you can possibly be, the best way is to actually have dedicated resources driving that strategy, developing that strategy, and then also driving the implementation, you know. And, you know, as you said, I can totally confirm that any organization that I deal with that has shared sales enablement resources is not strategic in their approach, you know, because there's always something else coming up. There's always a different priority that sidetracks these efforts. And what you're left with is sellers that have to figure it out themselves and buyers that have a bad experience because there's no strategic effort in actually reducing friction for them.
And that's exactly what I find. And I find when there's a dedicated resource, they get a junior resource. And it's somebody who's tech smart, but not strategically smart.
Yeah, exactly. I previously interviewed Tamara Schenk on my podcast. So she's the author of the book called Sales Enablement. And she keeps on banging on about that if you have only one sales enablement resource in your business, it needs to be a senior resource to really create that senior alignment to strategically really enable the sales team. If you have a junior person, what you often end up with is the situation that I faced myself with when I worked in sales enablement in my role at Fairfax Media, where I was really reactive and not really on the front foot when it comes to actually enabling the sales team. You know, all I did was sit at my desk and basically wait for the next query to come in.
Take orders.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Giving you stuff.
Exactly. And that's a resourcing issue, but it's also a mindset and seniority issue, you know. And the best case scenario you can have is if you really have a senior sales enabler on deck that has a decent budget available to actually execute on strategy and is able to create that senior executive alignment across all areas of the business, no matter if it's the CEO, the chief revenue officer, the chief marketing officer, and basically any stakeholders along the way to really make those initiatives happen. And that was it for today's episode. If you would like to learn more about sales enablement, please make sure to subscribe to the State of Sales Enablement podcast, where we republish these kinds of live sessions, as well as interviews with the leading sales enablement experts from around the world. Thank you so much for joining today, and I'll speak to you soon.